I used to come home from school, and at 3:30 in the afternoon on WDXR Channel 29 out of Paducah, anybody remember that? I would sit cross-legged in front of my television set and watch Batman. If I could have found the picture, I would have showed it of me as a toddler with a bath towel pinned around my neck for a cape. And so my cousins say, I would swear they're lying, I used to run around the house, da 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 da, Batman! I'm certainly glad there were no video cameras around in that day. Batman was my favorite childhood TV show, and I never dreamed I'd be talking about it in a sermon. Now, the Robin character, Burt Ward, was known for saying, holy, fill in the blank. In fact, according to Wikipedia, and some of you get your phones out, holysmokesbatman.com. Yes, there is such a website. Holysmokesbatman, all one word, .com. There were 911 different holy phrases used by Robin. Here are a few. Some of these you can't see. Holy rapture. You know, you think that might have caught on with some of the religious community. Holy strawberries, Batman, we're in a jam. I don't know if that one's real or not. I think somebody may have just made that one up. From my days in the clothing business, holy haberdashery. And then the bottom right-hand corner, that's Alfred the Butler, by the way. Holy demolition. But yeah, 911 different holy references used by Robin. Perhaps the best of all was this one. Holy superlatives. Holy superlatives. So, to shift gears just a bit. 16 songs in our songbook have the word holy in the title or in the first line. Probably the best known are some of the ones we just sang. Holy, holy, holy. Holy ground, version number one, or holy ground, version number two. A more recent, popular, contemporary song was by Chris Tomlin, entitled Holy is the Lord, based on Isaiah chapter 6, verses 1 through 3. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is filled with His glory. English synonyms include sacred, consecrated, sanctified, dedicated, and other than dedicated, those others are not words that we really use a whole lot in everyday conversation. Biblically speaking, there's the Holy Spirit, there's the most holy place, there's a phrase found repeatedly in the book of Revelation, God's holy people. Our Catholic friends have holy water. Kind of strange that that one never caught on with us. And then there's the Holy Land. And for you Monty Python fans, Holy Grail. So what do you think of when you hear the word holy? Grammatically, in the Bible, as an adjective, the word holy describes something, some object, a day, or a place, or someone that is pure, that is devoted. This is the idea that is found in the Isaiah passage describing God. As a verb, it means to be holy or to sanctify. As a noun, it signifies holiness, a holy thing or sanctuary. And this is the meaning in the Exodus passage that we're going to look at in a few minutes, where Moses is told that where he is standing is holy ground. Merriam-Webster's definition is threefold. Number one, there's this idea of something that is exalted or worthy of complete devotion. One that is perfect in goodness and righteousness. Two, something that is devoted entirely to the deity or the work of deity. Something separate and apart from, something designated for a special service or activity. And number three, a description of intensity. So everyday language, everyday usage describes the word holy as something that is perfect, God, something that is separate and apart or designated for special service or activity, or a description of intensity, holy cow, holy smokes. Okay, that's the Robin definition. Now, another way that we have used the word religiously, and I don't mean that we have used the word like repeatedly in religion, in our faith traditions. Another way that we have used the word holy is in the sense of that characteristic of God that none of us can ever attain. We use the word holy to describe the characteristic of God, the divine, the creator of all of the universe, that we are somehow supposed to imitate and strive for, but that is humanly impossible to attain. The concept of holiness, based on just my experience and observation, when it is used this way, tends to be a word that produces fear, that can generate guilt and feelings of shame. God is holy. We are supposed to be holy, but we can't do it. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 14. The writer says, "Work at living a holy life, for those who are not holy will not see the Lord." I've heard that verse preached on negatively, you know? Trying to produce fear and guilt and shame and, you know, we better be living holy or we won't see the Lord. And I'm not saying that's entirely wrong, but it gives us a skewed perspective of the majesty of the word. This definition alone implies kind of a fear-based, impossible perfectionism. And I'm left wondering whether or not it's possible for me to see the Lord. If we honestly think about it, that way of thinking is the basis of a lot of organized religion. That way of thinking, producing fear and guilt and shame, that's the way a lot of organized religion works. We want to make you afraid, we want to make you feel guilty, we want to make you feel full of shame, and we're going to be the only place that gives you any kind of a solution, so you're going to be obligated to keep coming back to us to continue to get your solution, because we're going to keep putting out there that which you can never get on your own. We tend to see things either one of two ways, right or wrong, good or bad, black or white, Democrat or Republican, secular or sacred, pass or fail, heaven or hell, in or out. You know, Richard Rohr calls this dualistic thinking. We tend to see things as having to be either one or the other. And this way of thinking says, if I'm not holy, if I'm not dedicated, consecrated, set apart strictly for the service of God, then I'm out. I don't have a chance. If I'm not exclusively devoted to the service of God, then I'm somehow sinful or irreligious, and Religion has done a good job through the years of asking such questions and making people feel guilt and shame and fear and remorse, essentially keeping us obligated to the sacraments of the church, which were the only things that could secure God's favor in light of our human imperfection. I remember this distinctly within our own fellowship. Some of you will remember this as well. Some of you are too young to remember this, thank goodness. But 30 to 40 years ago, there was this huge debate among churches of Christ over what constituted worship. Charlie remembers this. What constituted worship? Because the general school of thought, the general tradition had been that worship was what we did in the building for an hour on Sunday. Right? That was worship. And that was sacred. Everything else was, what was the word? Secular. So you had the sacred, which took place within the confines of the church building for an hour on Sunday, and you had the secular, which was what happened Monday through Saturday in the world. And by the way, that's why so much emphasis was placed in our heritage on getting worship right. Doing it correctly, because that hour was holy. That hour was... And then there came along another school of thought that said, well, no, wait a minute. Based on Colossians 3:17, isn't all of life worship? Isn't everything we do worship? Yes, there's a sense in which we come together in a church building for an hour or two on Sunday, and we gather together and we do some things that are part of that assembly. But to say that that's all worship is greatly limiting. So therefore, everything is worship. All of my life is an act of worship to God. All of my life is an act of devotion and dedication to God. And that was a topic that was hotly contested in our fellowship for many, many years. And I would venture to say that there are still some congregations of churches of Christ today that would greatly emphasize the 1 hour in the building on Sunday over everything else that's done throughout the remainder of the week. I'm of the school of thought that says it's all worship. It's all worship. It's all an offering to God. And I think there's a better way to look at the word holy. So, if you got a Bible, if you want to, we're just going to go here briefly. Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3, the first 7 verses. We've already sang about this story this morning. It's familiar to most of us if we've grown up with any kind of a church background or a vacation Bible school background or a Sunday school background. Actually, the end of chapter 2, beginning at verse 23, says, during that long period, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites are the descendants of Abraham. And the descendants of Abraham find themselves now in Egypt because they had to go there due to a famine. They had to go to Egypt to get food. That's all the story of Joseph. And so they find themselves in Egypt. During that long period, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out. And their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness, and he came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. So Moses is shepherding the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, who is a priest. He comes to Horeb, the mountain of God. Horeb and Sinai are synonymous. This is the same place that the Israelites would come back to after the Exodus. This is the same mountain where Moses would later receive the commandments. And Moses encounters a bush that was burning but was not consumed. And God speaks to Moses from the bush. Do not come near. Take off your sandals, for you're standing on holy ground. In the ancient world, it was understood that the literal presence of God is what made a place holy. So God is appearing, a theophany, God is appearing in a bush. And so that makes this area holy. When God would appear in a cloud or in a pillar of fire or be dwelling in the tabernacle or the temple. Later on, the Holy of Holies. All of these are places designated as dwelling places of God, literally, and they were seen to be holy. Now, also in the ancient world, there was this common belief in a three-tiered universe. You had the heavens, where God was, or, depending on your religion, the gods, little g. You had the earth, where human beings were, and you had the area beneath, okay, which was the area of the dead and the unknown. That was the ancient understanding of the universe. They obviously did not have the Hubble telescope back then. So we have the heavens, we have the earth where humans dwell, and we have Sheol, or the area beneath. And so you have this language like the prayers and the cries go up. And you have this language like God coming down. And the idea developed that God was somehow separate and apart from his creation. That God was some sort of almost human being that lived behind a cloud somewhere up in the sky and was separate and apart from where human beings were. And you have a lot of that attitude reflected in the Bible, but then you also have other language that is full of majesty and a different understanding. The whole earth is filled with his glory, Isaiah chapter 6. And that's pretty much the belief that we have now. We understand today that God is everywhere. The earth is filled with his glory. God does not live in temples made by human hands. That God gives everyone and everything life and breath. God is not far from any one of us, for in him we live and move and have our being. That's kind of a recap of Paul's sermon in Acts 17. So when God says in verse 7, I have seen and I have heard and I have come, we shouldn't necessarily take that literally, that God had to be called attention to the plight of his people, but that was their understanding. And this is still true for us today in that God is very much aware when we hurt. God is still seeing our misery. He still hears our cries. He is still concerned about our pain. And we're stuck. There we go. Because God is everywhere. Now, if God is everywhere, and if the whole earth is filled with his glory, if he's not confined to temples built by human hands, if God gives everyone and everything life and breath, if God is not far from any one of us, if in him we live and we move and we have our being, if where God is holy, then it is all holy ground. Because God is everywhere. God is present in all things. God is the creator of the heavens and the earth, and the whole earth is filled with His glory. If that's true, then it's all holy. If holiness is based on where God is, then it's all holy. It's all holy. God is everywhere. God is present in all things. God is the creator of the heavens and the earth. The whole earth is full of His glory. Thomas Keating said it this way, God is in all things and all things are in God. But Paul Tillich referred to God as the infinite and inexhaustible depth and ground of all being. The skeptic says, well, a lot of things certainly happen that don't appear to be holy. I agree with that. I don't disagree with that. I think if you look at the world and you look at situations in the world, there are a lot of things occurring that don't appear to be holy. But am I responsible for the whole world? Are you responsible for the whole world? Am I accountable? No, I'm only accountable for me. I'm only responsible for me. And if I'm trusting in the God that I believe to be ever present, then I trust that whatever happens in my life that I can't control or explain or isn't the direct result of someone else's choices or actions is what is supposed to be happening to me at that time. I don't regret the past. I don't worry about the future. Rather, I live in the present moment. Remember that New Year's Eve sermon, this present now, where God is. And if I'm in the present with God, if God is present everywhere, then it's all holy. If everything comes from God, if God is the source and the ground of it all, if He is this infinite and inexhaustible depth and ground of all being, then everything is holy. So I don't have this debate over what's secular and what's sacred. Because it's all sacred. I don't have this inner turmoil over what belongs to God and what doesn't belong to God, because it all belongs to God. And I can't rationalize and justify to myself that I can behave in a certain way at certain places and times, yet I can behave like I'm a holy man at other places and times, because I'm God's all the time. It's all holy ground. And I wonder if we can see that. You know, it's a whole lot easier. It's a whole lot easier for me to limit my spirituality to a few things I do in an hour on Sunday morning. But is it really easier? I'm fooling myself if I'm telling myself that my journey in life is based upon what I do for an hour on Sunday, and that my spiritual path and my, for lack of a better word, dedication to God is based on whether or not I've done five things correctly on a Sunday morning, because it's all holy ground. If Colossians 3:17 is true, if whatever I do is to be done in the name of Jesus, giving thanks to God, then would it not also be true of everywhere I go? Not just everything I do, but everywhere I go, every breath I take, every activity that I engage in, it's all holy ground. I'm going to tell you something, folks. For many years, I justified my addiction by compartmentalizing my life. I justified my addiction by saying, it's not all holy ground. Only certain segments or certain parts are what belongs to God. The rest belongs to me. And I lived in that delusion for a long time. And it took realizing what it really meant to turn my will and my life completely over to God, to come to realize that all of life belongs to God, that God is present everywhere in all things, and therefore that means all of life is holy. If you're an elder in this church, if you're a Bible class teacher in this church, if you're a deacon in this church, if you've been a lifelong member of this church, if you've been here every single Sunday since this building was built, good for you. That doesn't necessarily mean you're where you need to be with God, but guess what? You're holy because God lives within you. If you're in this assembly and this is the first time you've ever been in this room and all this stuff's kind of crazy and foreign and maybe sounds a little ridiculous to you, guess what? You are holy because God lives within you. Because God created you. God made you in His image. That makes you special. Anywhere in between those two. Maybe you've been here for a long time and you know, maybe this stuff still doesn't make sense to you. You're not buying it. You don't believe it. Maybe you're here because you're just going through the motions. But you don't anymore believe any of this nonsense, then I better not say what I was about to say because there might still be some little ones in here. Batman's a real superhero. How about that? You're still holy because you're still created in the image of God. Maybe you're here and you're hungover. Maybe you're here and you're still high from last night. Maybe you hadn't even been to bed more than a couple of hours, but somehow you ended up here. Maybe holy is the last four-letter word you would use to describe yourself. But guess what? You are created in the image of God. You bear the image of God. You are holy. It's all holy ground. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The earth is filled with His glory. Hebrews 2:11, the Hebrew writer expands upon this idea to a tremendous degree. But I'll just read this one verse. The writer says, both the one who makes people holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers and sisters. Yes, there's a sense in which we all carry God. We all bear the image of our Creator. But there is also in the Christian story this belief that we are made holy. Holy, we are made righteous by our standing in Christ, in Jesus. There is a sense in which those who trust God, those who follow the way of Jesus, are made holy by that standing. But when it comes merely to the presence of God, everywhere is holy. So may we come to see that God is present everywhere in everything. And may we come to see that all of God's creation is special or holy. And that includes human beings created in the image of God, bearing the divine spark, that are inherently deserving to be treated with kindness and love and respect. Just think, love God. Love neighbor, love enemy. It's a pretty good ethic to follow. And finally, may we come to see that the idea of holiness is not something to be afraid of, but that which was placed in me from the very beginning, which I already possess and have had the whole time. And may I allow the power of God, the way of Jesus and the presence of the Spirit to transform me more and more every day back into what I was created to be from the start. Holy. Let's stand and sing.